From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College,
this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
This is War News Radio. I'm Ajin Choi. Immigration has been a major topic of debate this presidential election, especially in the Republican primary. This week, as the third Republican presidential debate is approaching, reporters Allison Raybar and Rachel Yong look into the role of immigration in past elections and contextualize the current one.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
And we have to start by building a wall, a big, beautiful, powerful wall. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't even be talking about illegal immigration, Chris. You wouldn't even be talking about it. This was not a subject that was on anybody's mind until I brought it up.
That was Donald Trump, real estate developer, reality TV personality, and current frontrunner in the Republican presidential primary race. Trump's comments on everything from ISIS to Megyn Kelly have been making headlines, and his comments on immigration have been especially inflammatory. And he's not the only candidate who's been making immigration a key part of his platform. In the first Republican primary debate, Scott Walker proposed building a wall between the U.S. and Canada. And on a visit to the border, Ben Carson advocated not only for a stronger wall, but also for the expansion of Border Patrol presence there.
Both liberals and conservatives have laughed off the comments Republican candidates have made during interviews, speeches, and debates. The idea that the U.S. would ever build a wall between the U.S. and Canada seems like fodder for an SNL monologue, not serious political discourse. But when we talk immigration, and when we talk about deportation and crime and cartels, we are talking about international conflict. War has often been at the center of campaigns, but this brand of conflict seems more insidious.
The rhetoric we're currently hearing in the GOP primary race is an attempt to appeal to, for lack of a better word, immigrant phobia. This tactic is a double-edged sword for Republicans. On the one hand, Democrats have won the majority of Black and Latino votes for the last 35 years. According to the Pew Research Center, 71% of Latino voters voted for Obama in 2012, their highest vote share since Bill Clinton's 1996 victory. While the Democrats' share of the Latino vote might be getting smaller, they won 62% to 36% in the 2014 midterm elections. The Republicans haven't yet been able to take advantage of that shift.
On the other hand, a majority of the Republican voter base supports a hard line on immigration. According to Pew, 73% of Republican voters support building a fence on the U.S.-Mexican border, and the percentage of Republicans who support ending birthright citizenship has grown from 47% to 53% since 2011. So for Republican candidates, choosing a stance on immigration comes down to a choice between diversifying their voter base and energizing the already existing voters.
And this conflict between appealing to hardline voters and those with more moderate views on immigration is not a new one in American politics.
They keep coming. 2 million illegal immigrants in California. The federal government won't stop them at the border, yet requires us to pay billions to take care of them. Governor Pete Wilson sent the National Guard to help the Border Patrol. But that's not all.
For Californians who work hard, pay taxes, and obey the laws, I'm suing to force the federal government to control the border. And I'm working to deny state services to illegal immigrants. Enough is enough.
Governor Pete Wilson.
That was a campaign ad from California Governor Pete Wilson during his race for re-election in 1994.
In the 1990s, California was in an economic slump due to both a recession and a decrease in federal military spending. At the time, California had a big share in the aerospace industry. The political climate reflected and magnified these financial concerns. Immigrants were accused of taking jobs away from citizens and exploiting state welfare systems.
Immigration was a rallying point for politicians and voters during this election. Proposition 187, also known as the Save Our State Initiative, was approved by more than 59% of voters in the 1994 election. Prop 187 banned undocumented immigrants from being treated at public health clinics, attending public schools, and receiving state social services like food stamps or unemployment benefits. The proposition marked the first time a state had passed legislation on immigration, but it was eventually ruled unconstitutional in 1998.
Pete Wilson built his campaign on immigration and the economy, and he was largely successful, according to the New York Times, because of his, quote, defining and exploiting these issues. Wilson won 61% of the vote, a 13-point margin over his Democratic challenger. However, Wilson only won 25% of the Latino vote, the lowest ever for the Republican incumbent governor.
Contemporary discussions about immigration, legal and not, tend to focus on immigrants from Central and South America. Trump, and Wilson before him, have roused up images of people swimming across the Rio Grande or breaking through border fences in Cochise County, Arizona.
But immigration has a long history as a hot-button issue in American elections. Let's look all the way back to the 19th century, when American politicians warned of a different immigration whipping boy, the Irish.
Between 1824 and 1924, 34 million Europeans immigrated to the United States. Most of these immigrants came from Ireland and Germany and were fleeing famine, civil unrest, and severe unemployment. The majority were also impoverished when they came to the U.S. and remained in the bustling port cities they landed in because they couldn't afford to leave.
Americans feared that Irish immigrants would put citizens out of work, drive down wages, or cause tax hikes. These fears coalesced and led to the development of the Know-Nothing Party.
The Know-Nothing Party attempted to curb immigrant influence on politics. They advocated for a lengthier naturalization process and bans on foreign-born people holding public office. The party won state elections in New England, New York, and Chicago in 1854 and went on to establish a national political party in 1855.
During this time, anti-immigrant and especially anti-Irish sentiment ran rampant. Thomas Nast, a legendary cartoonist for Harper's Weekly, drew grotesque images mocking the Irish and their political influence on the Democratic Party.
This sentiment grew on a national scale, and the Immigration Act of 1882 was passed. This became the basis for much of future federal immigration policy. It detailed what types of undesirable people, including convicts, lunatics, and anyone who would become a public charge, would be blocked from entering the United States.
So, denigrating and dehumanizing immigrants, both documented and not, has always been a popular shortcut to support during an election year. What happens when the politicians touting this rhetoric actually enter office?
Democrats have held the White House since 2008, and President Obama was elected with strong support from Latino voters in key states. However, Obama's time in office has also seen the highest number of deportations in American history. A 2011 survey conducted by the Pew Research Center indicated that 59% of Latinos in the U.S. disapprove of the way that Obama handles deportations.
This disconnect between what candidates speak about while campaigning and the policies they pursue while in office contributes to the perception that immigration and the dehumanization of immigrants themselves is not a conflict but a talking point. This obscures both the violence of the rhetoric itself and the fact that immigration policy and conflict are issues that exist beyond the campaign trail. For War News Radio, I'm Rachel Young.
And I'm Allison Raybar.
Our show is produced this week by Allison Raybar and Rachel Young, with help from Leo Elliott, Joe Mariani, Haruka Ono, Anna Weber, and myself. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archived shows, learn more about our program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's warnewsradio.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up between shows and let us know what you think. I'm Ajin Choi. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.